Welcome back to Dare to Feel. I'm your host, Alexandra Roxo, creative artist, best-selling author of Fuck Like a Goddess, and my new book, Dare to Feel, transformational and spiritual mentor and coach. This series is based on my latest book, Dare to Feel. In each episode, we'll deepen into topics around intimacy, relationships, spirituality, healing, and beyond. In today's episode, we are speaking with Mark Groves of Create the Love and Kylie McBeath about liberated love. I am so pleased to have Mark and Kylie with us today. Mark Groves is a human connection specialist, founder of Create the Love, and host of the Mark Groves podcast. Mark's work bridges the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. Kylie McBeath, also known as Being is Beautiful, to her 130,000 Instagram followers, shares daily guidance and teachings on relationships, spirituality, and embodied liberation. She is also a certified health coach and the host of the Journey Home podcast. Well, I am super excited to have Mark Groves and Kylie McBeath here, the authors of Liberated Love. You will probably also know their work on Instagram, Create the Love and Being is Beautiful. Your book is so revolutionary. I haven't read anything that brings everything together in such a beautiful way. And I wanted to start our time by reading actually a quote from Ram Dass that you put in the book that I had never heard, and I think sets the tone for where I want us to go today. And where I want us to go today is to really lay out some of the beautiful teachings that Mark and Kylie have put in their book in a way that you all can feel and want to dive deeper into. Okay, so this quote: the highest relationship is one where two people have consciously and intentionally said, yes, let's get free and let's use our relationship with one another as one of the vehicles for doing that. In order to do that, since we know that in freedom is truth, let's be truthful with one another. So what I love about that, which sets the tone for your book so beautifully, is two people coming together and saying, let's get free and let's use our relationship to do that. So let's start with a little background about you all as a couple before I go into a little bit more depth about the book. How long have you all been together? What the whole journey of your relationship is in the book, so everybody can get that there. But how long have you all been together? And just give us a little bite size about like where you started and where you are today.
How long have we? 8 years?
We're moving into our ninth year.
It would be like January something was the first time that Kylie flew out to Vancouver, right? Yep. January 20th or something like that. I forget. But yeah, ninth year. Yeah. We did have a little pause in there, which is in the book, but we call it the sacred pause, which is a term Kylie came up with, which is maybe what you get to call it when you get back together. But our journey has been a beautiful one. I mean, there was a real transition, like Ram Dass's quote references, where we actually started to see that the frictions we were having, as opposed to, although they were challenges that needed to be resolved in order to move forward, we were finding ourselves in similar conversations, similar conflicts, similar frustrations. And it ultimately led to the end of our relationship. But the beautiful side of that is that what we started to do was to see that the frictions that were happening and the things that were coming up for Kylie, and this is one of the principles in the book, is that what's coming up for one person is coming up for both. It's just that one, the other one doesn't know it yet. And so there's almost like an honoring of the, and having reverence for the partner's sensitivity. And Kylie uses the term that her body was like the somatic canary in the coal mine. And we started to really, it first started with that, like, hey, instead of trying to fix what seems to be this problem, which is you can't commit, you can't, it's like, why can't you? Like, what is in the way in our relationship that we just recognized that we couldn't keep going the way we were going, which, as I said, led to the ending of the relationship and really giving birth to setting the stage that we honored truth and love above everything. And then the way we ended the relationship was done with such love and such grace that no longer was there a fear. We didn't see this at the time, but I can see it in hindsight. No longer was there a fear that love would go anywhere. It was always present regardless of what we were going through.
Mm. Yeah. Relationship 1.0, as we like to call it, was about 4 years. And Mark and I were playing out a lot of our entrenched family system dynamics within our core relationship with each other of like, oh, okay, here's that codependency. Here's that relational imprint of self-erasure of like, I'm going to be whoever I need to be in order to keep you, until that eventually became not sustainable for either of us energetically, spiritually, emotionally. And then we did that sacred pause where we both separated and had no intention of getting back together at that time. Because it was just like, that was not working and I'm not interested in going anywhere near that dynamic ever again. But, you know, as fate or destiny has it, after 10 months of doing some really deep, potent work, both individually and I think somewhat together in other ways, not in actual flesh, but you know what I mean? We got back together and rekindled into relationship 2.0, which we've now been dancing in that dynamic for 3+ years. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So you just mentioned the word codependency, and I love the various definitions that you all give of codependency in your book. I actually was like, huh, I've never heard of that and that. Can you give us what the Mark and Kylie definition of codependency is based on your years of research and also lived experience? Because it is a central theme that you guys present in the book in the sort of relationship 1.0, which I consider for everybody listening, it's kind of like the relationship that is full of the unhealed patterns, right? And the, like you said, the intergenerational stuff before we start waking up to going, huh, do I really want to continue to play these things out? So codependency, and I did a podcast recently with someone who wrote a book that also had themes on that. We talked about it a lot, but I would love to hear through you all's lens what codependency is.
Yeah, codependency, how we define it in the book and the various definitions, but I'll give you our definition, is a relational dynamic where we source safety from someone or something outside of ourselves at the expense of self, our needs, and our wholeness and our well-being. And why we landed on that definition specifically is, one, we wanted to remove any shame that might arise or emerge for anybody who identifies as codependent or who is struggling in relational dynamics with trauma bonds, you name it. There's like all of the different names, the overfunctioner, the underfunctioner, the love addict, et cetera. And it's like at the root of that, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And at the root of that is dysregulation, disconnect from self and dysregulated nervous system and insufficient, like we talk about in the book, insufficient co-regulation in early childhood between you and a caregiver, or you and your mother, equals an inability to self-regulate. And so those imprints in early childhood is like, I need another to be okay. Right. Like, and so that imprint of like, I need somebody else to be okay because I'm not okay on my own, or I don't know how to access okay on my own because I didn't receive what I needed in order to self-regulate.
Which one of you experienced that as a child?
We both did. Okay. Yeah. Like, I think it's so interesting is like when you don't have a consistent attachment figure, or there's dysregulation in our nervous system. And listen, at this time on the planet, like, and we look up our generational lines, it's like, was there a regulated adult? I don't know.
There's of dysregulation. It's like, how that works.
Right,
like,
right.
Are they drunk 24/7?
Which level?
Right. And I'm like, I bring some laughter into that because I'm like, these are challenging times that we've grown up. Like, you know, the nuclear family is already already something I have a bone to pick with, because I'm like, that's not sustainable. It's not the best or right or in alignment with our mammalian design of how we raise children.
Yeah.
Like, it should be multiple adults taking care of one child. Yeah. And instead, you know, my sweet mother, like, four children doing everything. Of course she wasn't regulated. Of course she couldn't be attuned and meeting all. And so there's no shame or blame there. But from that earliest relational dynamic, and since mothers are not resourced, in my experience in our culture historically, and I'd say that we're getting more well-resourced today, right. These imprints form of, like, the baby and child will do what it needs to do. So it'll leave its center and orient around mother and kind of live with the questions of, like, what does she need? How can I make her okay so that I'm okay? How can I manage my siblings? How can I manage my external environment in order to ensure their safety? And it's like, all of us, to some extent, sorry, not all of us, but many of us have shades of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it's like, when we don't feel safe or we don't feel okay, we try to control the external environment.
Yeah. How did that look different for each of you? Because I imagine, even if you both had those tendencies that created, right, this body of work sort of started springing up from that. But how did that look differently?
Yeah, you know, in that, where codependency is traditionally thought of in the framework of addiction, or like someone in relationship, families in relation, like Al-Anon and the original works from Melody Beattie, really looking at that. What we saw was that so I would be the one who would be more self-abandoned. Like, I would erase myself in order to chase Kylie. But the key part too is that And Kylie's identification of, like, why can't I choose this relationship? What's wrong with me that I can't choose Mark? And I'm like, well, listen, I got lots of solutions to this. Like, I have a whole job that is based on solving this for you, fixing this, helping you heal. Here's some books, here's some podcasts, I have a podcast, you know? So I think about how many people in service-oriented roles, like coach, therapist, healthcare practitioner, dietitian, name the thing. They're generally, I would say, till they're not, they're monetizing their codependency. They're monetizing their ability, which is not a shame thing. It's just a reality. Like, it's a superpower that they're highly attuned to people. And they're like, this is just a natural gift. People just come to me and tell their problems. And it's also because there's a lack of containment in the self. You know, I need to be needed. So this played out in our relationship. And so in order for her to not believe she's a problem that needs to be solved, and once that starts to even be looked at, well, now I don't have a job anymore. So, like, if she doesn't have a problem that needs to be solved, she might leave me. Mm-hmm. I'm not safe. Mm. So there's a self-abandonment from the other perspective for Kylie or whoever's listening who might identify with that role. I'm the problem, the person with the anger issue, the person with the, you know, name addiction. The thing, the addiction. Mm-hmm. What happens is that there's a they're not centered in themselves either. There's a self erasure. Because the self is beautiful, whole, lovely, wonderful, the soul's expression. But if you identify that there's something wrong with you and you need people to fix you, you naturally create hooks in your relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to keep you close by having this thing.
Yeah, so, being incompetent, helpless. Yeah. Like, and again, like, all of these are really young, early strategies that we've learned to help us cope and survive. So
yeah, that's kind of how it looked a bit different.
I was kind of the taker, I guess. You know, utilizing common language when we talk about codependency, he was the giver and I was the taker.
Yeah.
Which, like, he was constantly.
Sometimes
she was more avoidant.
Yeah, in reverse. You know, we think of, because of the Al-Anon AA model, a little bit has that kind of, oh, the men who are the addicts and the women who are caretaking or whatever. So good job flipping the script, keeping everybody on their toes. Good job.
Yeah, I love that. I'm like, am I the, yes, I am.
But I want to name something though, even in those dynamics, because a lot of the time the giver will be like, I'm the victim of this dynamic. And it's like, okay, hold on. First of all, like,
the martyr,
you know, the martyr role, like, first, without taking self-responsibility, you're not going anywhere. And second of all, nobody's core needs in that relational dynamic are getting met. Their needs of being seen, being heard, being listened to, being witnessed in their totality are not actually being met. We're just kind of playing out our roles, our dynamics. And it's like,
right. And it's
nobody's winning. So I just want to like name that, because I think sometimes there's like this hierarchy that
like that one person like has more power, or like they're getting they're having their cake and eating it too, but they're not being met, right? Because
it's not authentic, and it's not out of genuine reverence for one another.
Yeah.
Like we're using, as you said, power dynamics in order to source connection.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and I think more traditionally people would seek out information who are more anxiously attached. We cover attachment in the book, and how these frameworks all overlay each other, but they would more often, and I would identify as that. So I say they, I really say I would seek more relational information in order to learn as much as we can. And Harriet Lerner talks about how any subordinate group, which is obviously different than my context, but any subordinate group needs to learn the needs and nuances of the dominant group. So when I get asked all the time, like, why do women tend to follow your work more or go to your events or, you know, whatever it is, consume relational, emotional intelligence information. She said it's because in order to maintain safety, they actually have to become, she doesn't say this, but essentially ninjas of emotion. Like, because if a male is erratic in their emotion and it can't be resolved through whatever tool, it can lead to devastating outcomes, still can, you know? So it's an interesting that, you know, we tend to orient to want to discover this stuff so that we can like try to predict and manipulate and care for. That's why I think a lot of the self-identity of the anxiously attached or the pursuer or giver is so rooted in like, no one shows up for me. Like, what about me? And that was, mine was like, no one chooses me. Like, you don't choose me. And it was true. There wasn't a full choice, but I was entertaining not being chosen. I was staying in this, I was saying you're ambivalent, but really I'm ambivalent because I'm,
I did that. I was you for 2 years.
We're in a recovery group right now. It's hi, I'm Mark.
Well,
no one chose me, but I didn't choose me.
I mean, it's kind of, it's sobering to be like, wait, I'm afraid of intimacy in a way.
Where
like in the surface, it's like, I'm hungry for it. I'm hungry for love. I'm ready. I'm here. I'm ready. And it's just like, whoo, like five stories down, like what's happening, right? And, which is scary. And it is those little child parts that are usually scared. So this is all super helpful. And one thing that I love that you called forward was just this notion, and I wrote down the quote that about it, like, isn't it wild to think you can be in a relationship yet not in a relationship? Because I think a lot of what we're talking about, like these dynamics, like we're not going to go all the way into the, you know, the attachment pattern, but the, all of these different dysfunctional dynamics, maybe that's a little bit of a harsh word. What would you say? Dynamics that need love and attention.
Yeah. Kai uses the term crunchy.
I love crunchy. Okay. All these crunchy dynamics that we have learned from loving family members, sometimes not so much, but who were operating in survival mode, who were under-resourced, who were just modeling behavior that they saw. And then you're like, okay, so then I get into a relationship, I start modeling the same behavior, and then boom, I decide to wake up, I decide to heal. So, and yet we look and it's like, you can be in relationship. There are people that are married that have stayed together for many, many years and that are still functioning from the non-function. So talk to me about relationships that are coming from a deeper place. And then the other ones, the ones that are in that, like, I'm in a relationship, but I'm not really in it. And how do people start to distinguish the difference? I think my audience knows, like, we're deep divers here. But just for some context, how do we know? Because we also, as a culture, glorify, which you all mention in the book, relationships that have longevity. Oh my God, they've been together for so long, without something that you point out, without really considering the depth and the quality of the relationship. So give us a little bit on that. How do we know? How do we feel the difference? And approach this kind of collective shift around how we see relationships. It is a big question. Yeah.
It is a big question.
You want to.
You know, it's so funny. Like when I sit with that question, I'm like, how do you know? Everyone is on their own individual relational journey, you know, and where, no matter where they're at, it's really what I want to invite people back into is like, how are you feeling about where you're at? How do you feel in your relationship? How do you, like, do you feel connected? Is there something you're yearning for or longing for? And usually those are pretty big, like, bright lights of like, okay, maybe something wants to shift, or maybe I am craving more intimacy or more emotional connection with my partner. And that kind of can lead the way into discovering like, hey, you know what? These patterns aren't working for me, or this dynamic, or the way I'm showing up, or the way we're showing up right now isn't necessarily what I'm interested in creating anymore. Like, I want more intimacy. I want more connection with you.
Yeah. I want to point out too, that the sense of that is often oriented to from this place of like, there's something so wrong with our relationship that this is coming up. And we're saying, well, actually the relationship is saying this work, your relationship is this beautiful sacred space that is actually bringing this forward for you. So it's like such a different way of thinking about it, which is like
one more time, because I just want that to really sink in for people.
Well, that this relationship, in order to go to another level, is saying, hey, these things need to be brought forward and resolved. And that's such a different way of looking at it.
Because they exist within us. Relational field just calls it forward. Like, this amazing, the relationship is that kind of a space holder, or like, I don't know, I'm imagining like this loving muse that's saying, come on, let's do this work together. Let's deepen together. Not blaming the relationship, right?
Right.
But we do get into, in the book, I know you get into some distinctions, like not all relationships obviously are capable of this kind of depth, but we'll table that for now.
Well, I think it's such a beautiful opportunity because, you know, if we all of a sudden now, if we have something coming up, if we think, now we're fucked.
Right.
Like, this relationship doesn't work. We have more friction. Instead, because we are rooted in the principles, it's like, we're not going anywhere. This is material. Like, this is something that's coming up in our relationship that is actually within me that needs to be resolved so I can be better everywhere. Like, what a gift that that Kylie reflects those things to me and holds them with reverence. Like, she does. Like, even though things are hard for her that can come up, or for me, there still is a deeper level of like, well, we're gonna got this. We don't got this yet, but we're gonna got it. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also just want to name is like the willingness piece.
Yeah.
Like, are both partners willing to kind of move into the unknown?
Baseline.
Like, are you gonna take responsibility for your side of the street? Are you willing to do this work with me? Because I wanna go deeper.
Right.
I want more for us. And yeah, that willingness is really soothing, I think, to have in both partners. Now, of course, you might find some resistance on either side because it's confronting. Because what we're saying is like, hey, there's some stuff we got to look at. And going to look at five stories deep at your stuff and what you haven't touched is not necessarily...
It's below the basement.
It's not comfortable stuff. And that's why in the book we talk about resourcing. Like, how do we actually become resourced so that we can move towards truth, so that we can move towards the things that are uncomfortable, that are in the way of our ability to go deeper in love.
Yeah, and you're not meant to do that alone. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of the times we don't want to go into the depth of, let's say, a breakup, the grief associated with that, which I would argue most grief activates unprocessed old grief. And so, you know, we don't want to go into it because we don't want to be swallowed by it. And that's why you need a friend, a partner, a community, you know, and that's obviously the framework of things like Al-Anon and AA. But we need those frameworks because what we're basically saying is like, I've got your hand. Like, you will not be swallowed. I will hold you, but I will not take you out of it.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who tries to save people from emotions, it's because they don't know the value of them themselves yet.
Ooh. That's a good one. That's a zinger.
And we also weren't given that containment, you know, for many of us when we were young. Like, we don't have any model or template of how to hold somebody or how to listen fully or how to actually hold Mark in his grief or how to hold, or vice versa. Like, I remember in our closing ceremony, I think about this often all the time, our closing ceremony of Relationship 1.0, which was deeply profound, but we had this whole thing we laid out in the book, but it was the hardest I've ever cried in my whole life.
Oh, man. Cathartic.
Like,
soul.
I don't even know. I actually feel like I grieved for the, like, 5-hour old baby. Like, I feel like it literally went back that far because Mark was able to hold such a strong, loving space that it was just like time, you know? And it makes me emotional now, but it's like, wow, what a gift it is to be able to, one, hold your own self and your, and actually be present to your own emotional world, but then to be in relationship with other people who aren't trying to fix you or shame you or minimize or gaslight, like, who can just hold the space for you to process and feel what, and then you've wrote a book about this, but like just to be with all of the stuff that's here.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful thing. I've had that in the first 2 years of my relationship also. It's just like, wow, I'm allowed to cry this hard and go this deep. And I mean, some of those child, I was like, it's that sort of AA adage. I've never been in AA, but I know, like, but that if it
I went once,
yeah,
it was like 10 times.
You went just to see if there's anyone there.
I went with a friend of mine and I was like, this is like TED Talks. This is pretty
good. But what I was going to say is that adage or that kind of phrase that's used, if it's hysterical, it's historical. And so I had so many hysterical ruptures in the first 2 years of my partnership with Eli, which I'm like, he was like, he knew, like, this isn't about what just happened, right? But she's needing to, like, go to this deep place. And having him stay and be there, I mean, that kind of healing is so incredible. And I'm glad we're not playing out those dynamics where I'm in the bathroom crying and he's sitting on the other side of the door saying, like, I'm here when you want to come out, when you want to open the door, you know. But having those moments and being able to feel with somebody is so deep and so potent. Now, before people get like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I want to do all that crying with my partner. You don't have to, but let's talk about how you all break down the skills for intimacy, because I never heard anybody kind of like break down the skills around. I mean, I've read different books on all the skills separately, and I know we all take classes on stuff, but to put them together. And what I loved is you said emotional attunement, nervous system regulation, boundary work, and communication strategies as like, those were some of the things that stood out for me. I was like, okay, if you want to be in the space of liberated love, right? Not be operating from the dysfunctional patterns or unhealed patterns, this is going to help you. So for those of us who are freaks in this area and have read all the books, and if you look at my bookshelf, you'd be like, okay, girl, you know, and I'm sure yours is quite similar. But so we have studied these things in detail. But what about for people that are like, wait a minute, but like, how do I learn emotional attunement and boundary work and communication strategies and all of what's necessary? Like, how does a busy person know how to do that or learn how to do that? And then also the second part of the question is like, what if they have learned and listened to the podcast and stuff, but then their partner is like, I don't know what you're talking about, and hasn't done that kind of depth of study?
Yeah. I'll tackle the first part of that question in terms of like, how can we bolster up our internal resource, and those being like emotional attunement? Do we know what emotions we're feeling? Are we connected to our bodies? Are we able to name and identify our core emotional needs? Because just even having the language supports our nervous system and being able to find more regulation, more safety. And in my experience, and also work with clients, is like that internal like knowing and language has been so huge for building the infrastructure to be able to like relate. Because if I don't have language, or if I'm disconnected from my own emotions, then I'm just running on autopilot. I'm just like following the scripts or doing what I've done, because that's what I know keeps me safe. So emotional attunement, I think, you know, it is as simple as like checking in. Like, in the moments of like really starting to track your nervous system, really starting to track how you're actually feeling and creating space to be with those feelings. Mm-hmm. We talk about like this practice of self-containment of like, can I sit with these emotions? Can I start to like, how am I feeling? Am I angry? Am I sad? Am I feeling shame? Am I feeling guilt? Like, what is it that is going on in this internal world so that I can actually meet it and be with it in ways that I haven't met it or been with it or have ever had anybody else meet it and be with it because I've not actually brought it up out into the open. And so I feel like that's like a first step. You really do need to connect with your own internal world. Mm-hmm. The second being like that nervous system regulation. There's many books about this topic of conversation, like, and there should be because wow, we really need a lot of information around why our nervous systems are so dysregulated and why we're struggling to find, you know, homeostasis or why we're struggling in our relationship. It all roots back to the nervous system and what's been patterned and imprinted in our nervous system, both in our early childhood and lives, but also intergenerationally, what we're being asked to heal at this time. And the nervous system work is layered and beautiful and deep. And it also just begins with tracking the nervous system and understanding the nervous system. Yeah. Like I always find that having the intellectual information allows the process of moving it down into the body, into a felt sense experience mm-hmm. is really supportive. That's why you're seeing all these principles in the book. Cause I'm like a geek like you, I read all the books and I'm like, okay, how do we distill this into information that actually allows somebody to understand what's happening in their internal world so that they can bring it up and out and work with it in productive, loving ways. Mm-hmm.
Quick little pause here. I want to introduce you to Groovy. They make non-alcoholic social beverages. They are award-winning for their craft beer and wine. We had their delicious dry Secco at the Dare to Feel book launch party at Contact Sports in New York City. It was delicious, perfect for a toast when you are feeling like going alcohol-free. You can buy Groovy at Whole Foods, Target, Total Wine, and more. All right, back into the podcast.
Yeah, what I think so valuable about that approach of understanding the physiological part is that mm-hmm. it contextualizes the felt sense. And so we go from the self-identity, what's wrong with me or why am I feeling this way? I can't speak. I can't to, oh, of course, like this makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now I understand that because we cover also in the book, like your relationship blueprint, where you come from, how it shapes you. So now you have context. And because you have context, you no longer, or what we hope you move towards is that you now, through context, you decouple shame because you're able to see that how the response you had to whatever has shaped you is actually the perfect response in order to keep you alive and to keep you, quote unquote, in relationship. Even if it's in relationship with people who aren't necessarily healthy, you're still in relationship. So that aspect of understanding physiology then gives you, oh, I am a biological being. Mm-hmm. Like there's this, I think consciousness and the way that, because we're like the only species that thinks about how it thinks, as I know, maybe dolphins and shit do, but why I say that is because we seem, because we are sometimes the observer of our experience, we don't think we're like lions or like animals that have reactivity. You know, or plants or whatever, you know? And I think that just changes things because now you're like, oh, I actually have a nervous system and it's my work to regulate. And then I think what really becomes, which all those practices are about, is how do I be present? How do I actually be in the experience so I can decide what kind of relationship I want to create, what kind of self and what kind of values I want to orient around in my relationship? If the relationship can't hold that, that's okay, but am I going to stay in my center? And I think that comes to that second question you have, which is like, well, okay, I'm learning all this stuff, but like my partner has no interest or doesn't understand. Let's do the first part, doesn't understand. You can change relational patterns without the other person being part of the consciously part of it, which I think is kind of wild, right? Because if I start to change how I relate, I communicate, there is a natural dance that changes. Yeah. So now we go from doing, let's say, the two-step to the Macarena. It's like I'm forcing them in some way, lovingly, to shift how the dance is done. So What happens though is that you'll often get resistance from the other person. Harriet Lerner calls it a change back move, which mm-hmm. is like, I'm going to try to get you back into the two step. Mm-hmm. So you have that where you can. Now we have to recognize that we were talking about like willingness.
Yeah.
Like the best thing you can do is bring forward the intention to shift any relationship. Mm-hmm. And hey, are you on board? Mm-hmm. You know, I think so often the chaser is like, here's another book, here's a podcast. Oh, we got into the car and a podcast on. Oh my God, I didn't even know.
Oops, I left this book on the bed. I wonder if I gifted The Way of the Superior Man to like so many lovers in my 20s. Let's just say I did not end up with any of those people. But
if they read it and they took your feedback.
They're married and they all have kids now. So thank you. I mean.
Yeah, right. Right. The book that plants the seed, you know, and I think.
I was extremely the codependent one. Like, let me fix you. Let me help you. Let me.
Me too. I'm like, man, if you learned this, you'd understand why you do what you do, not me.
You all are two conscious people in relationship doing that dance, right? And you're able to notice. And same with me and many other couples we know. But what about the people that are like, but my relationship is fine. Like we're great. Like we don't fight. We don't have any problems. How would you say like for those people, for them to approach this work, if, and maybe they've done healing work on their own, or maybe they are just not willing to admit it, but there is a large part of the population, right? Who, the idea that something is, we won't say wrong, but that something is there ready to be worked with is still really new. They may not be listening to this podcast, but they're out there. And right. What would you say to those people as to why, like, to engage with this work? If it's like, oh, well, you know, we're pretty good. Like, we function pretty well. We don't really fight as a couple. Like, we're great.
I'll let you take that one. You love that conversation.
Well, I think the first part is that even any of this somatic self-awareness, how to handle conflict stuff, is really about going on a curious adventure of discovering yourself. So I think for a lot of people, the gateway to healing or change or transformation mm-hmm. occurs through some sort of frictions in their lives. They lose a job, they get sick, you know, name it. They have a rock bottom that we mm-hmm. think of like drugs, alcohol,
right.
They go through a breakup, or they have, I think in relationship, because of what's considered quote unquote normal is really very much codependent patterns. There's a lot of, like when someone says to me, we don't fight, I'm already like, okay, like, what did you learn about conflict, right? Like we start to look at, I remember I worked with this one guy who he's like, my family was perfect growing up. Like I had the best childhood, which I remember saying that actually when I first started doing this. So I was like, okay, so we get into it and he's just like, oh my God, my parents were so conflict avoidant. Like I've never learned how to manage conflict. So that's always like a seed in, but I'd say for the people who are like, things are good. Well, first thing is I know that not everybody wants a great life. Like not everybody wants to be happy, and versions of happy means different things mm-hmm. for different people. So it's very subjective, and not everybody wants a transformative relationship. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I'll say. The greatest predictor of your health is actually the quality of your relationships. And what determines the quality of your relationship is the unconscious or conscious recognition of the amount of safety you have to be yourself, to self-express, to come alive. What I notice when people go through breakups is they go, now I went on the trip, or now I'm doing the thing I always wanted to. And I'm like, how crazy is it that we don't do that in a relationship? Yeah. Like, why is the relationship not the place that brings you most alive? Mm. You know, and so if someone's even listening to this, because that's the only way they'll hear, that's the only way they'll hear the answer to this question, is like, start there. Like, follow the seed, follow the path of curiosity. Mm-hmm. It says, you know, there's that saying, like, when the student's ready, the teacher arrives. It's like, just even thinking, maybe I want more, or is this all there is to life, or am I supposed to be more happy? Mm. Those are all gateways to the record, because most people who self-abandon, are so disconnected from even having a self that when they finally just think, huh, like there's something just a bit off. That, as Kai says, is the canary in the coal mine. Yeah. It's like, and you have to be able to walk with the grief as you open up, which is why we cover grief in the book, because like you grieve having never fully felt, you grieve having never fully had a self, you grieve the life that was possible. And now you're stepping into the potentiality of a life that is possible and a relationship that is possible. Also, the last thing I'll say, because this is very verbose, is that often we are afraid to fully come alive because we're afraid of what it'll do to our relationship. And I think that's especially true for women, but that can be any gender. And what I'm saying, having met women like this before, Kylie, who I wasn't ready for, like the book you gave to those men, is that they all planted seeds in me by saying, hey, you're afraid of this, or I noticed this. And I wasn't ready for it then, but it started the journey unconsciously. So when your partner brings forward like, hey, this book I think would be really helpful, or there's this podcast that matters to me for you to listen to, listen. Because by the time in the research, women initiate divorce more than men, they initiate breakups more than men, significantly more. By the time they say the thing, it's about 2 years before they leave. And we like to pretend like we're shocked that the door is closed and they're walking out. But really, we know the writing was on the wall much earlier. And so we hope for people that they listen, because what's possible for your life and your well-being and your physiology. I always think back, like relationships that don't have conflict or have high amounts of conflict, there's often a sort of baseline physiological inflammatory state.
Yeah.
You know, it's all connected.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was a very long
answer. It's good and it's important, and because I do think there are a lot of people that like the relationship being peaceful is like kind of maintaining that status quo and like not really poking, you know, to see what's underneath. Maybe it's not even poking, just checking. I mean, this is with in my partnership, I'm like, we don't need to have a reason to see our mentor therapist. Like, we don't need to have a problem. Like, let's just go for maintenance. Let's just go for check-in. So we don't go when, oh, now there's so much built up, right? And inevitably, when we do sit together in that space, there's always little things that are there and present. But for busy people, we don't always prioritize bringing them forward, because it's like, oh, we have a kid, we are working, Like, I'm not going to make a big deal out of this. I don't want to, you know, we're having a great day. I don't want to disrupt our flow. And then those things build up, you know? And I think you all are helping us to find a culture where we can talk about that and it's not stigmatized. It's not like, oh, I don't need the podcast or the therapist or whatever. So one thing that I thought was an interesting point, what I want to hear you all, your take on, is like the difference between having needs and being kind of needy, and like the mask that I think you all called it, going with the flow of like abandoning yourself, right, in a relationship. And how do people distinguish what it's like to be, have healthy needs in a relationship, or to be overly, like, I hate the word needy. I want to say, or to be imposing, let's say, of your needs.
Yeah. And there's like a different energetic.
Yeah. And that shadow of like the sort of prize that's put like for women who can go with the flow, like that, I feel like culturally is something that it's like, oh, like I'm that kind of gal, I can go with the flow. No problem. Which is, it seems like a codependent shadow. How would you all distinguish this for especially women, I want to say, listening, who are afraid to have needs, maybe afraid to appear needy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was the cool girl who was totally chill with not having needs or not rocking the boat or not not being the one who put too much burden on any system. Right. Because it, you know, when we look back at the roots of that, it's like, well, my needs didn't really matter. nor was it safe to have needs, or was it safe to take up too much space, or was it safe to actually put boundaries or limits in place? And so again, that imprint of like, I'm just going to take on this mask because this is what feels the safest for me and my expression in relationship. And for women, this one, you know, the taking up space and being able to advocate for needs from a really clean, clear space. And I think I use the word clean because there's no hook in it. It's like, I have this need, and yes, do I want it to be met by you? Yes. But if you can't meet it, like, you know, there's also the ability to hold the no, or the ability to be open to the various ways in which we can meet that need. I think, you know, to distinguish the difference between having needs versus being needy is, in my experience, there's what Sarah Baldwin, a somatic practitioner, calls a survival connection. And it's like, there's a difference between a healthy connection versus like, I need you and we can dance with the needs that exist between us, versus I need you to be okay. And there's that energetic difference and shift. There's like, one's coming from like a very deep survival place of like, there is no other option. Like, I need you, capital I need you, and you don't have another choice. And it's that energy of like, there is no other choice that actually doesn't create a lot of space for needs to be worked with in a relational dynamic. So I would say, advocating for those needs is deep sacred work, especially for women at this time, because we do have needs and they matter. And how do we get those needs met in good ways? You know, without manipulation, without passive aggressiveness, like without the ways we learned how to get our needs met. Like, can we do it in a healthier, more connective way?
Can you give us
an example? And that's like kind of the...
Sorry to interrupt you. Can you give us an example of like how, let's say, you guys as parents or something, how would you advocate for your needs or express your need in a way that feels authentic to you? I'm curious if you're open for it.
No, I don't mind at all. It's like, hey, babe, like I'm exhausted and I'm really needing an extra hour of sleep. Are you able to meet me right now and care for Jasper?
Yeah.
It's like, it's that simple now, of course.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always that way. Like, I remember Mark and I, when we first started this journey into honoring my needs, it was like, we had to have needs check-ins where he used to have to ask me like, what do you need? And my voice would freeze.
Wow.
Like, I almost didn't have access to even being able, one, I didn't even have the emotional language. What's a need? Like, wasn't even there when I first started this journey. And so that's why that's such an important part of being able to relate, because I need to have connection to my own needs to be able to bring them forward for them to be met.
Yeah.
In good ways, you know?
I think too, like a need that's sourced from like trying to keep close, like Kylie needing advice on something when she identified as like, what's wrong with me that I can't choose this? Mm-hmm. Like a need that's actually, it keeps reinforcing the self-identity that there's a problem. The other side too, I think, is the energetic that comes in the need. A lot of the time when people present as needy, it's because actually in the ask is seeking permission.
Mm.
Like in the ask is seeking validation of the need. When your needs are embodied, or you're discovering how to embody them, because that's a journey, there's like a, this is what I need. Like, it's not, oh, please, sir, will you tell me that this need is valid? Or please, like, if you meet it, oh, but if you don't, it won't get met. It's like, this is a need.
Yeah.
I love you. This is what my request is, you know, and that, there's such a different energetic
it is.
To them. That's, I think we all know it.
Yeah. And that's it. You're spot on. I think it's important for us to remember. It's like, it's not about us having too many needs, but like how we bring those needs forward is the art, you know? And I sometimes totally flop at this still. And I will just like say my need 5 times in a row because I'm afraid it's not going to be heard. And I'll say it in like a really weird bossy way. And my partner's like, look, all you need to do is just be like, hey, I need 20 minutes to take a shower, to go to the bathroom or whatever. Instead, I'm like storing it up, you know, and I have such self-compassion for my, you know, those moments, because I'm like, oh, cutie, like you think that you have to fight that hard because when you were a kid, you did, you know, and now actually your partner is totally happy to meet this need, you know, and you don't have to be kind of, intense about it. Like sometimes, you know, I'll come out with an energy that's kind of like, rah, and it's like, whoa, all you had to do was say like, I need a glass of water. So I think that's really important, because I think the go with the flow kind of mask that maybe is still popular, and it could be popular with like youth and kind of teen culture and that kind of thing, that is, it's so painfully limiting for us, especially as women, when we use that kind of cool girl mask to actually be needsless, you know, when
it's right. And not centering the relationship around her, you know, it's like the bulldozy style or the needless, like we oscillate between them. But really what we're saying in Liberated Love is like, how do we dance together with needs? How do I respond to your needs? But also, as Kai said, being able to hold pushback, but that doesn't invalidate the need. But rather just says like, how does this relationship resource each other? Because I think often the counter side of this is like, I just won't have any needs. And it's like, ooh, way to go, Beyonce. Like it's not a healthy way to be either.
Right. But that's also that protective of like the hyper independence that so many of us, and myself included, default to very easily.
That was one of my questions. It's like, I love how you guys define hyper and hypo independence. And I'm curious about your definition of those, and also your definition of good and bad triggers, which maybe you could weave those together if they feel like the answers could be, but you all, or you could do them separately, you could each choose one, but you talk about that in relationship, right? Like hyper independence or hypo. And then you also define good triggers and bad triggers.
Yeah. Hyper independence being like, I don't have any needs and I'm good on my own. Hypo being like, I don't have any needs and I do need you. It's like it's a very confusing place to be, because it's like confusion, where it's like, my needs are here, but I don't need them from you. And so you're kind of just like stuck in this like push-pull dynamic with the hypo independence, because it's like, I do need people, but I don't want to have to rely on people. And I don't know how that kind of bridges into
the good and bad triggers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it can be separate.
I mean, I don't really see any triggers as bad. I necessarily, but like how we operate triggers, how we respond to them is what changes, you know, because I really always think like, what a sacred thing that your body has brought forward this reactivity or this like hypersensitivity to something, which is really a radar that's saying, an alarm that's saying, hey, when this happens, this is what's about to happen. And if you don't do insert or like trigger reactivity or leave, we're going down the same road, and we end up creating the same relational outcomes we're afraid of ending up in. And so I really think it's about honoring the trigger and deciding how we're going to orient to it from this place of like sacred information that's inviting an upgraded behavior, you know, instead of defensiveness, it's openness.
Yeah. And I want to kind of expand on that from a nervous system perspective, because for many of us, like moving towards intimacy, moving towards a vulnerable conversation, moving towards being seen can feel very triggering, can have a lot of somatic energy accompanying them. Because being seen was very, doesn't feel safe.
Right.
Being intimate doesn't feel safe. And so our bodies will kick up of like, don't go there. And that's really an opportunity to be like, wow, I have some internal limits when it comes to being seen, taking up space, using my voice, having needs. Like, and those are what, quote unquote, what we do call the good triggers in the body, because it's like, oh, it's showing me that I haven't felt safe historically. So I'm going to move towards this with tenderness and with care. As I lean into it with Mark or with your partner. And that's what's beautiful about that awareness, because I think sometimes when we get triggered, we automatically go to, there's something wrong here. And it's like, well,
there's information, yes, but how are we going to orient to that information?
Yeah.
Right? With curiosity, with grace, with understanding, and be like, hey, like moving closer to you right now, or moving into this new depth of intimacy, whatever that might be, feels like a lot. And I need to move slower, or in order to go there with you, I need us to have more communication around it. Instead of just like bypassing the trigger, it's like honoring the nervous system and the right pacing of the nervous system as we continue to move into these deeper layers of relationship with ourselves and with each other. Such deep work.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to think like a good trigger is the recognition that you're moving to the edge of some new territory that you're creating.
And I hope that for everyone out there in the world, that people can start to relate to it that way. And that, you know, the sort of cultural memes around, if it doesn't feel good, say goodbye, thank you, next kind of vibe.
Right.
Like, I hope that can kind of make its way through the collective, and especially women, so that we can come to what you just said, that actually that the triggers can be so potent and so deeply informational and supportive to the change of behavior, the change in of the traits that we've inherited. So thank you for that. So last question, how can people, practitioners or people that are new to this work, how can people transform their relationship into this liberated love space? Like, are there a few kind of starter practices or tips that you would offer people who are like, okay, cool, I want to go deeper in my partnership, or I want to call in that deeper partnership? Where do I begin?
I mean, there's two things that I think, I'm interested to see what Kai thinks too. There's two things that I think are really, we start to shift how we see will completely transform our relationships and our lives. The first one is really starting to look for where we don't tell the truth and where we don't bring that forward to the relationship. And that can just, for a week, just practicing like, is this coming up for me? Am I bringing, I'm not telling them about it. What things have I been holding on to? Do I miss my partner? Do I resent them? Is there unresolved pain? Are there things that I truly want that I'm not expressing? So just like playing with how you relate to talking and sharing the truth. I'd say the second one is pretty challenging, in that it's the recognition that two people in a relationship have two paths. And why I suggest playing with that is because sometimes we don't honor our own growth or our partner's growth, or even celebrate it or push them towards it. We unconsciously will try to contain them, or be maybe our partner's trying to contain us from pursuing things we love, speaking out, you know, all the things, because we're afraid that their growth will pull them away from us. And so I think a really powerful thing to start to see is, one, look at your past relationships. Was there a deep reverence for each other's individual paths? And then how do you do that together? Because, you know, I can't predict the future. No one can. But if I am honoring that Kylie has her own path, that if I don't want her to live it because I don't want her to leave me, then I'm not honoring her first. And I think that actually serves liberation, like relationship, because really liberation is about, as Ram Dass said, like, liberation's about truth. And my partner can leave anytime she wants. She could leave the relationship. She could just decide it's over. And that's a truth we have to just know. No amount of fuck vows or any of that shit will help to actually make that truth not true. So what I'm saying is, if you can acknowledge that, then now you can recognize the sacred power of the choice they're actually saying, I'm here. Out of all the places I could be, I'm actually here. That actually, I think, just always, every day invigorates, what am I going to do then to still be a good choice, you know, and vice versa.
Yeah. Just to build off of that, for me, when it comes to walking this path from codependency to liberated love, it all comes back down to resourcing. Mm. Like, how am I building my internal resource and my external resource so that I can step into more choice and agency in my life? Yeah. Because we need that internal, external foundation to feel safe and moving towards our edges. Yeah. And there's a lot of lists in the book about how to resource in those ways, like building your financial foundation. If you're sourcing that security from a partner and that's limiting your voice and your ability to take up space in the relationship, then it's like, I need to really look at that. I need to look like, how can I resource for myself so that I can access more voice, more agency in the relational dynamic? Yeah. And what am I afraid about taking up more space or stepping into that financial independence, right? There's like so many different layers to how that may operate for one in their lives and what that might bring up for them as they continue to liberate themselves from patterns of codependency or from outsourcing at the expense of self. So that's like, for me, it's at the root, like, where am I, what am I sourcing outside of myself and at what expense and at what cost? Mm. And like, get really real with yourself about that. And like, how does that feel? And then what would I need to resource in order to have more choice in that dynamic?
Beautiful. And you all do have some really great lists in the book of like kind of getting into the nitty gritty of where to start. So thanks for giving us a little sneak preview. Thank you all so much for taking the time. I know you also are parents, and I imagine your little one is somewhere waiting to be reunited with you as well. So thank you for taking the time to be here today. Anything
you
else?
As well.
Well, yes. Anything else you want to add or share? I mean, everybody go buy their book, Liberated Love. I love the title so much. And it just feels good in my body when I say it. So, and follow Mark and Kylie and all of their great work. Anything else that you've got going on?
Well, if you buy the book, you can just go to liberated-love.com. You can find links to buy there, but we also have a free meditation and a workbook to go with it.
Great. Awesome.
And we're just so grateful. Thank you for having us on your podcast and, you know, for the people listening, for trading time to listen to us. We're just so honored.
Yeah. Thank you so much, love. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, you know, the last thing I'll say is it's time. It's time for a new template to emerge in the way we relate to ourselves and one another. And I'm hoping, my prayer is that this provides a pathway, one pathway. There are many pathways for us to come back alive.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, love.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Before you go, I want to offer you some questions for contemplation, integration, and writing, if you wish. The first one is to consider, was there something in today's episode that touched you or moved you or triggered you? An image, an idea, a story? Take a moment and just think about it. Is there anything that provoked you, that reached inside of you, that perhaps brought up a memory or an idea from your life? What in this episode inspired you? Was there something that surprised you, that stood out for you? Could you jot it down just to remember? Maybe it was a concept or something that the guest said that brought you to some new awareness. Was there something about this episode that upset you, that provoked you, that pissed you off? Giving yourself full permission to dive into that. Was there anything about this episode that soothed your soul, that helped you feel a little bit more belonging, a little bit more at home, a little bit less like you're the only one? Taking those questions into your heart or into your journal or into your day. If anything stood out that you want to share with me, please do so on social media, direct into my DMs. I would love to hear what touched you, what moved you, and what you're taking from this time together. And if this episode truly inspired you in some kind of way, share it with a friend. Like, subscribe, and write a review. It means a lot to me. Thank you. So happy you're here with me, daring to feel.